Welcome to What's in the Box, the show about us not being able to remember any actors' names, why Jonathan Nolan is American, and nothing else.
And Dumbo. Podcast is back.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Hit record, Tristan. Hit it. What were you saying about Chris Evans?
How the fuck is Chris Evans 37 today? Because he looks like, he just looks like so much more of a man. And like, I read on Twitter today, it's like, Chris Evans, 37 years old. My first thought was, oh, fuck, I've done nothing with my life.
Are you saying this because both of us are 37 this November?
But basically,
Oh, God.
I've done nothing with my life. You can't go Brosnan on me again.
I've forgotten how to Brosnan.
You can't go full Brosnan.
Not what Brosnan's all about. What was Snowpiercer like? Snowpiercer
is bizarre. Like, it's beautifully photographed. Mm. Like, it really is. I've got this folder that I basically just rip shots from, for inspiration, stuff like that. There's at least four shots in from Snowpiercer.
Right.
In that, it looks gorgeous, but it's just batshit and makes no... It makes no sense when they start moving through the train, but like, hang on, you've already accepted that the only survivors for humanity are on a train made of perpetual motion and constantly going around the world and never stopping. Yeah, pretty much. And the whole of society has evolved basically on this train, so you've got the working class.
What, how big's this train?
It's pretty long.
Is it?
But it's only, I can't remember how many people are on it in total. It's only going to be a couple of thousand, if that.
So it's like a giant city train?
Kind of, yeah. Each carriage represents, there's like a school carriage. Eventually, the further towards...
Sounds really good.
The further towards the front you get, the more upper class and crazy it gets. So you get all the people who are like fucking posh and doing drugs and all sorts of shit. But you just kind of looking, there's no point. Do you actually go... Oh, that's where these people live.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no sleeping quarters or rooms or anything like that. So
why are they on a train? Why is the world turned into a place where
there's
a train?
It's the end of the world. Because
it's like a post-apocalyptic future.
Snowy. It's all snowy and cold.
Oh, like a sort of cold water world.
Cold world.
Snow world.
Yeah.
Snowpiercer. But what's Chris Evans' character's role in that?
He's like a terrorist, or he's basically one of the downtrodden.
And fair enough.
And he starts... they take children. They come from the front and take children. That's the new thing that started happening.
Oh, what, rich kids?
There's somebody who comes from the front, like their representative.
Yeah.
Right? And they've come and they pick children. Like, if they've got... I'm trying to think what the woman's name is. Fucking hell, she was going to play Bowie. Whoa. Tilda Swinton. I could see her playing Bowie, couldn't you?
Yeah. I could see any weird-looking girl playing David Bowie.
But I say Tilda Swinton, like, measures kids, like little kids, and then takes them and they're never seen again.
Yeah, right.
It starts off with, like, getting those kids back, amongst other things. And then it turns out, like, the food that they've been eating, you find out what that actually is at some point, because they eat this fucking horrible, like, gruel stuff.
But Tristan, is it worth a watch?
Probably.
What?
Yeah, like watch it once.
How many stars out of five would you give it?
Three. It's an unusual film. It's got John Hurt as well.
John Hurt's in it.
John Hurt being solid as usual.
Okay, cool. How have you been, by the way?
Yeah, I'm fine.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
I don't care how you've been. That's what I've asked.
You
bought a house. See, this is why we've been away. This is why I've been away for a while, because Chris has been buying his first house.
Yeah, I bought a house. I had to move into a house. Couldn't do a podcast because I was moving house. It's just difficult and requires lots of preparation.
You got a sex dungeon, though, didn't you?
Yes, that's true. Two sex dungeons, one in the attic and one in the dungeon. So it's a sex attic. It's a sexy house. So what that's meant, though, is that I haven't really been able to see any films.
Yeah, because what were we going to do? We were going to do
there's
Solo.
Nothing out, no, because there's nothing out.
We were going to do Jurassic.
Don't you hate summertime?
Don't you hate summertime when you couldn't go and watch like Jurassic Park or Solo or whatever.
Deadpool 2.
Deadpool 2.
There's nothing out. It's not worth it. Anyway, we should have a holiday. Tell you what I did want to talk about, though, mate. Did you know that the new Dumbo trailer has landed by Tim Burton? Tristan's left the room in disgust. In disgust. So that's Dumbo. By the way, before I go into letters, did you know it's exactly today, as we record the 14th of June, exactly 3 months until what comes out? The correct answer is that it's exactly 3 months until we become disappointed by Shane Black's Predator. To this September the 14th.
It looks like it's going to be balls. I don't understand the people that think it looks good. It looks like Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Don't, that is bang out of order,
no,
mate.
I don't think
that's
it will
bang out
be.
Of order.
The thing is, I don't think it will be because I quite like Shane Black. Yeah. Stuff. He was in the original Predator, for God's sake.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
The good one.
Yep.
Or Predators is also good. I like that. It goes Predator, Predators.
Predator 2.
Predator 2. Although that is... No, Alien versus Predator.
No!
Yes, Predator 2.
Okay.
Alien versus Predator Requiem. That's the order, officially.
There must be another Predator film, though, no?
There's Caravan of Courage, where... there's Caravan of Courage, where the Predators... Where some people crash on a planet full of Predators, and they start teaching them that horses can fly, and they rescue the family from a cage monster.
Got some letters that have come in.
Go on,
As I said, it's a bit of a slow time for films at the moment, so it's a shame.
Being hammered by a blockbuster every week.
You've seen some decent films, haven't you?
I've seen all of them.
You haven't seen Deadpool 2?
I have seen Deadpool 2.
You haven't seen Han Solo?
I've seen Solo.
You haven't seen the Jurassic Park 1?
I won the competition and saw the film.
What? Well, you did actually win a competition, didn't you?
Yeah.
What did you have to do to win it, and what did you win?
We had to get into one of those... Sphero.
Hold on. Where were you?
At Comic Con.
Where's that, London?
In London, with Mish.
Yep.
And Mish said, we should go and do this. So we did.
What?
You basically just go and get your picture taken. You've got one of those, they've got one of the Spyro ball things.
You were in a Spyro ball.
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
Whatever. One of the fucking balls.
Yeah.
They've got one that's smashed up with a little backdrop and a velociraptor, and you just go and sit in it, get a picture taken, hashtag it, send it out, and then win loads of stuff.
That picture is incredible, though, so you deserve to win. What did you win?
We won all the Jurassic Parks. 1, 2, 3, and Fallen, and Lost World.
Yeah.
No, 1, 2, 3, fuck. 1, 2, 3, and... What's it even called? Jurassic World. It's called Jurassic World.
I heard that Jurassic World, the latest one, is the same as the second Jurassic Park, which was called the Lost World.
It is very... It's very similar to that, but... Two things. One, it's not mired by an awful sound mix.
What?
Do you know what I remember? Like, everybody watches Lost World. You couldn't hear a fucking word of that movie. It's the earliest I remember being aware of sound. In terms of... It's like anything. Like, if it's done well, you don't think about it.
Yes.
Yeah, like editing and cinematography. It just shouldn't call attention to itself.
No, exactly.
And we sat in the cinema and couldn't... There were so many muffled lines and...
Muffled Postlethwaites.
Yeah. Postle. So, yeah, it's pretty much that plot again, but better.
Is this called The Lost Kingdom?
Fallen Kingdom.
Lost World. Keep up with these Jurassic
World
films
over
the last
Kingdom.
40 years. The second Jurassic Park film... The second Spielbergo film had some incredible set pieces in it. One incredible set piece, which is where they're in that trailer and it's hanging off the cliff.
Oh, was that too?
Yes.
That was very good.
How good is that?
That was very good.
I don't remember watching a set piece and being like that tense in a long time.
I'll tell you what was great about Fallen Kingdom Extinct Face or whatever it's fucking called.
I'm not going to talk about the set piece from Jurassic Park 2.
Do you want to talk about... I thought you were finished.
Why don't you say it? We had a phone that was going to crack through the thing and you thought that something was going to happen, but it didn't.
I haven't seen it since we saw it at the cinema when we were 15.
Isn't it that you think that the trailer's going to fall off the cliff, but that's not the real danger? The real danger is that the glass is going to break beneath their weight. And therefore, it's not like the danger of it... Oh, is it both?
It's both. Then also, doesn't the raptor fall?
Come on, Chris.
Doesn't the raptor fall on the glass as well?
Raptors? No, mate.
Isn't there a raptor chasing?
No,
he's just
obsessed with raptors.
It's Jurassic Park.
No, it's like a phone, like a faxy phone.
Okay.
A faxy phone's about to, fall through and someone catches it or some shit like that.
Okay.
Jeff Goldblum probably catches it. I can't remember, mate. It was a long time ago.
So Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. One of the things that surprised me was how good the writing was in terms of how it was plotted.
Right.
Because every element tied into something. It was kind of like screenwriting 101.
Okay.
Even a point where a character makes a ridiculous decision to the point that I was like, I'm out. Like, this is fucking ridiculous. And then about 2 seconds later, I was like, oh, that's why. It all makes perfect sense.
Well, so they kind of like covered off every base or...
Yeah, they'd managed to, they'd covered, they'd checked all their pieces against each other.
Like it made sense.
Yeah. Which I thought was really good.
What is that example? I'd quite like to know about that.
There's the Pete Postlethwaite character.
Oh, and there's another one.
Yeah. The Ranger or whatever.
What, Chris Pratt?
No, not Chris Pratt. One. There's another one.
Yeah, okay.
Who you think's on?
Another one. Yeah, whatever.
Who you think's on like your side? Yeah, betrayal. Yeah. No one sees that coming. But he's got a thing about collecting. He's building a necklace, and they don't make a huge thing out of it. Like he doesn't talk about it or anything like that. But you can see he's collecting dinosaur teeth, and he puts them together, and he's clearly going to make a fucking necklace out of it at some point.
Yeah.
And when the new fucking genetic hybrid thing is asleep, or he's tranked it and it's asleep.
Yeah,
the dinosaur. It's no longer a threat. It's in a cage anyway, but it's going like, and he just goes and drops it.
Yeah.
He then proceeds to open the cage and go inside, and you're thinking, right, this is ridiculous. It's going to get out. The only reason you're going in there is so it can get out.
Yeah.
And then, so at that point, I was just like, of course, you want a tooth from it. Of course you would, like, it's only a little thing, but you're like, yeah, okay, it makes perfect sense now. And the dinosaur's super intelligent, so you're only pretending to be asleep.
Oh,
and
it does it anyway.
It eats his arm, and it's wicked.
Oh, you spoiler fucker. Can't watch it now, can I?
It eats his arm, and it does does the Alien Ripley thing as well in Alien 3. You know, it's pressed right up against, but you see
Fincher.
Him, but you see this dude crying, which works really well.
Oh, it's a shame that we're now old enough where those classic shots from Fincher, like for instance Fincher in Alien 3, is being reused to an audience that I've never seen it before, because that is the single greatest shot in the history of Alien.
Yeah, that's fair to say. It's a defining shot, isn't it? You look at it and everyone knows exactly what it is. I mean it does help.
Ignoring all the other stuff like the chest burster and the egg opening and the first time you see a queen and her with a flamethrower and the kid called Newt and the tail the coming out of the water and it was the best shot in the history of Alien. Fincher. So I have actually seen something.
Okay.
I did watch Mindhunter at last.
You finished it, yeah?
Finished it.
What did you think?
What a fucking chip. I needed expectations managed a little bit better. Thank you, Netflix.
Because it does just kind of go, stop.
Seriously. Why don't they say pop?
I know.
Just tell me that I'm getting half of a season and yet they have to find funding to finish it off. Then I'll be like, oh, great. But with the penultimate episode, I'm thinking there is a lot to wrap up here, Tristan. Like, they've been teasing this sort of like central psycho character in the background in everyday life. We've seen him like...
The actor's amazing as well.
A minute of footage, 10 episodes or something.
Oh, the actual killer. The one who's out there. Yeah,
the actual killer.
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Sorry, yeah. So they're teasing this like real psychopath that's on the loose, right? Fucking hell. Netflix, you bastards.
Great series.
So what's the... I've heard it's been commissioned... The second half's been commissioned.
It's Netflix.
Paid for.
Isn't it? There's like, hello, Netflix, a green lip. What's your series about?
Well, not really, because it's like, I mean, where's the second half then?
Yeah, they're making it, Chris.
No.
Right. I'm touching his leg now.
No.
It's okay, Chris.
It's been a
year.
Justin,
they're making it.
Look at it.
It's okay. In the meantime, just watch the rest of Altered Carbon.
Oh, now that's you. You've seen more of that than I have.
Oh,
you
hurting.
Love Altered Carbon.
I don't know why I'm watching.
What's wrong with it?
It's so shit. And
it's not shit.
And it's so dull.
Do you know what? Do you know why I like Altered Carbon?
You've only seen 3 episodes. Yeah. You don't get to say
that's
like
enough.
It.
You don't need any more. The reason why I like to watch it, Altered Carbon.
You haven't got to the woman who secretes drugs while she's being screwed.
Do you remember that terrible Channel 5 program that was on at like maybe 12:30 every night when we were in A level?
What, Eurotrack? X, I never was. Lex.
Something like that. Is that right? Is that what it's called?
It's where science
no
fiction
idea what it's
goes
called.
To die.
Yes. Channel 5, late 90s.
Lex was, that's
that
the
was
woman
incredible.
With, that was the one with the red hair and the massive boobies and the head.
He has
the
a head.
The droid.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lex.
I used to love that shit. And it was fucking awful. But in watching it, there was a certain pleasure in just how fucking out there it was, which is, I guess, the reason why some people unbelievably think Star Trek is good or has value.
Now you're just poking the bear deliberately. Fuck off.
So, look, what I liked about Mindhunter was it's great to see Fincher. I say it's not really Fincher's series, is it? These kind of headline directors kind of poke their toe in it. They do the first episode and then they give it to a load of other guys and they kind of like reappear at the end for the last one, don't they? I think he directed maybe two or three of them at least. But the other directors who aren't Fincher, who have to direct the shows in between them, his bookending it, they have to embody Fincher's visual style and his tone, and the look and the feel of Mindhunter is gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fincher is like crystal clear visuals. His photography is so fucking clean, mate.
Yeah, I think I sent you a frame. Like one, there was one particular picture where I was like, you know everything about the people. You know everything you need to know about the people from this one fucking shot.
Yeah,
it was just so beautifully, like it was a tableau that's so beautifully arranged.
It's like it's that intro. It's the CGI shots in Fight Club. They're so like clean, even though you're going through like a Starbucks cup and in a like bin and coming out of it, or flying through a building and seeing right down to the car park into the truck with the bombs in it, panic room when it's like flying through the coffee cup handle and stuff like that. He's so clean. He's like beautiful.
I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, so let's look at, you've got Nolan, he's a director at the top of his game.
Yeah.
And you've got Fincher, who's, again, director completely at the top of his game.
Yeah.
They have two fundamental different ways of approaching film.
Right.
In terms of the monitor, which I've always found fascinating.
What's that?
Which is Christopher Nolan doesn't watch the monitor. He's famous for it. He'd maybe look at the frame and that's it. He stands near the actors, obviously out of shot, and he's watching the performance with it through his own eyes.
Does he not look through the camera's lens, the viewfinder?
No.
So he leaves that to his DP.
DP. He'll check a shot, but that's it. During the take, he's watching the actors.
Yeah, okay.
As if you would in a theatre performance.
Yes.
Yeah? Fincher doesn't look at anything but the frame. He is fixed on the monitor. He does, when checking through the shot, he does left eye, right eye, which is left over from his ILM days, because the left eye apparently is for composition, because it's connected to the creative right side of the brain, and then the right eye for checking focus and checking the technical elements, because it's connected to the left hemisphere for the mathematical part of the brain.
What?
That's what he says. Now, so
that is,
I mean,
level shit.
I started aping him. Like, I did that for ages, and fucking when you see Alex again, ask him, like, because we started doing it when we were shooting stuff, and our stuff got better because of it, but I don't genuinely think it was because of left eye, right eye. I think it's because we were just actively considering the frame more than we were beforehand. But anyway, so his thinking is there's no point looking at anything other than what's in the picture, because the picture is all the audience is going to see.
Because what's Nolan watching then?
Nolan's watching the
actors.
Watching the actors, and anything that you see on the faces of the actors, the camera's going to pick up anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe he just feels more connected to it without a piece of glass between them. I don't know. It's interesting. It's just two fundamental different approaches.
That's really
from two directors who are animals.
But for me, like, Nolan doesn't quite come close to Fincher, you know, in terms of the films that they've made. I know, like, Nolan's a master director, right? He didn't have a crack at an Alien film when he was fucking... Mind you, he had a Batman thing when he was younger.
Yeah, when he was... See, the thing, the difference I found is that up until Dunkirk, I would say that... people argue that Nolan has a problem connecting with people, like character-wise.
With an audience?
Yeah.
Which is weird if he spends so much time looking at the characters, right?
Isn't it? But people find his films quite cold and maybe too cerebral. Not in a Kubrick sense, but...
Maybe it is in a Kubrick sense, actually, because he made Interstellar, which... you know, he said was influenced by 2001.
Yeah, but it's way better.
I mean,
that was the best.
That's because I had to go with Star Trek, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, but what I was going to say is I've found more of Fincher's films boring than I have. Fincher has a pace problem.
Zodiac.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it just Zodiac now that I think about it? I think they're one for one, because Dunkirk and Zodiac.
Whoa, pacing and Dunkirk.
I was thinking more of boredom.
What?
There's nothing to connect to in Dunkirk.
No, okay.
Dunkirk's got no story to it. I was waiting. I was so desperate for my old man to watch it. And the torrent I got down the phone of how awful he thought it was. We was like, we just like, where were the men on the beach? It's like, there's literally nothing in that that matches anyone's account of being at Dunkirk. Mm. Blah, 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 blah. In terms of tension, obviously, fucking amazing. But the film's got no story to it at
all.
Well,
yeah, I know.
It hasn't. You can't argue that point. No, it's got...
It's a ticking clock, isn't it? It's like... And therefore, the story is just
what?
The
There's
countdown.
No threat. That you can't. The Germans aren't coming.
They are.
We're told they're coming. We never see them coming.
Yeah, we do in the first shot.
Not really. You see those kids running through a very, very modern France.
Yeah.
Like, so modern that I thought it was actually they were going to do a CGI thing and morph. I thought at one point those lads were going to run past, like, ghosts of modern people.
Oh,
like what? Yeah, like they were running down actual streets now. It's like, you don't know what once happened here. That's what I thought was going to happen, which I was like,
walking
shit.
Walking past like an Apple shop.
It's just like, yeah, the dude's running past with like doorbells and shit that. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Security cameras.
I'm at least like, make an effort.
Exactly, yeah. Like holograms selling fucking phones. Sex workers.
Yeah, so what a sidetrack. So coming back to Mindhunter.
Yeah, Mindhunter was good, wasn't it?
Was. I love the dude who plays the main psycho, the one he keeps going to.
So, yes, we'll talk about that. It took me I knew nothing about Mindhunter going into it, right?
Me neither.
So it took me a while to figure out, like, you know, what the point of it was and actually what its structure was. And it's... I don't know if this was its original, like, intent... And I might be wrong, but for me, it felt like, you know, the scene in Silence of the Lambs when she interviews Hannibal Lecter, right? It's that, except with a different serial killer each week or each episode.
And without the glass.
Yeah. Is that what they were getting at?
No,
interview with a vampire.
Not necessarily. I thought it took me back to a fascinating time of, oh shit, somebody had to think of all, because we've grown up in a world where there are such a things as profiles for serial killers, expected patterns.
And the word serial killers.
And the word serial killer, yeah. And it took me back to a point in time that I had never considered before, which was, oh shit, somebody had to come up with these theories.
Yeah.
They hadn't even coined the phrase serial killer. Because in your own self-importance, you can't conceive of a time before you were born. So that's what I found interesting more than above anything else.
Yeah.
And of course, the struggle knowing, watching it with the hindsight, knowing that the character's decisions to push for all this research and all this shit are correct.
Mm.
And against, you know, and having to fight against what was practical and correct thinking at the time. And that's what I found almost as interesting, if not more interesting, than him sitting down with the killers.
What was the setup then? Working at a time before all of my modern day
No psychoanalysis. Remember, they're saying that, you know, at that point they're still thinking people are just born bad.
Right, that was it. Yeah. And so the setup is that this new department has been formed.
No, it's not even been formed. He's trying to... Oh, yeah, no, there is a small kind of behavioural science unit-ish.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like Mulder in the basement. Like, it's not really akin to anything and hasn't really got any direction. But what they're doing is they're using it to go out and take what they've learned on the job and teach it to local police.
Yes. And you get to see the local police's reactions to that modern approach to forensics or psychoanalysis or psychology, that they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of joy,
but,
isn't it?
But what it, yeah, and it is a joy to see them coming up against the attitudes, but also then it happens more than once, is when once they're out of the bravado of the room.
Yeah.
Some cop will say, look, we've had this really, quietly, had this really fucking horrible case that we can't wrap our heads around, and you know, could you maybe give us some insight on this, like asking for help quietly, and that's the start of you know, the next case. What I also found interesting, because you asked me ages ago when I first started talking about Mindhunter, you said, what's the pat the dog moment for the character? that lead, the lead character.
Yeah.
And I said he doesn't have one.
Yes.
His Pat the Dog moment is his failure to talk somebody down.
Yes.
You sympathise with him because he's trying to talk, at the very first scene, he's trying to talk down a hostage taker, and that he fails, and the hostage taker kills his wife and blows his own head off. And that's your, that's why you sympathise with him, because he fails.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was different.
Fincher. Yeah, but again, like, I don't know if Nolan embodies that kind of appreciation for that level of economic storytelling.
See, people, the biggest criticism, oh no, the two biggest criticisms actually of Nolan are that he's too cold to connect it, and that his films are too long. I have never found a pace problem. He's used the same editor every time, a guy called Lee Smith,
right,
who I think is a phenomenal editor, like in terms of pacing.
Yeah,
just beautiful. Like Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Inception, Memento, all of them just beautifully. Fucking one of my favourite films, The Prestige.
Yeah,
beautiful. There's, I wouldn't say he has a pace problem.
What about Dunkirk though? Like
Dunkirk used tech, was more focused on technique than storytelling. I physically found myself on the edge of my seat.
Yeah,
like, it's tense as fuck.
Yeah,
and I'm like, and I found myself actively in the cinema thinking, like, why am I tense now? I don't give a shit about any of these people.
Mm.
And it's because he and Hans Zimmer have used that fucking ever-increasing note that never arrives.
Well, if you sit on a goblin chair long enough, mate, you're going to come up with a theory
that
eats its own tail.
You know, which is the same principle. It's the same tone that they use for the Batpod in The Dark Knight.
I do, but other people might not, Tristan.
So it has an ever-increasing tone. It just seems to keep raising. So it goes, the engine like goes...
Oh, yeah, doesn't it?
And the idea was that it was, they wanted it to sound relentless,
yeah,
like it couldn't be stopped. And their way of doing that musically was to create, was to come up with this tone that never, or that gives the impression of never actually
climaxing.
Thank you.
Yeah,
climax. It's coming
just,
everywhere.
You just put in your hand in the air.
And so they took that. They thought, okay, we can. How can we use this to build tension? So none of the tension in that is built through character.
Which repeats itself. Yeah, it resets
just constantly.
And, goes,
and that...
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
physically a ticking clock in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do we use that technique to build tension rather than character and peril? And there is peril in it, but you just don't give... you're not with anybody long enough to give a shit about them. There's some technically outstanding stuff. All the Spitfire stuff is incredible.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. It's amazing. I like how he's fucked with time. It's brilliant. Again, that's great.
I thought, you know what? I thought he's needlessly overcomplicated.
I agree with you. There's no reason for it at all. That's like, oh, I really want to do an art house film. It's like, well, then do an art house film. Like,
I just thought it could have been better signposted. You get like one thing in the start of each, like
1 hour, 1 minute. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute, what was the thing it said at the beginning again? Like, was it is this a day away or a week away or an hour or a minute or what away? A second? Oh, fucking hard. Come on. Because that for me seemed like needlessly overcomplicating it.
What an unnecessary way of telling a story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. That's actually ridiculous.
It adds nothing to that film. It just covers up the fact that there's no fucking story to it.
But do you know what? I didn't mind that because it was, it's a roller coaster ride. Like, literally, it's a fucking, you pay for your ticket, the bar comes down, and then it's like, it goes...
Yeah, that is a perfect analogy for it as well. I agree.
And you just go with it, you get thrown around, and at the end of it, you leave, you catch your breath, and you walk off.
Mm.
But I do believe that that's all he wanted to make of it. I don't believe he failed in making a better film. I believe he made the exact... film he wanted to make.
I agree with you as well. I just think, why that film? Why that topic? Why? Because you could tell...
It's a great statement to make as a director. I'm going to put you in a cinema. I'm going to strap you into a roller coaster. Mm. Trust me, you will not fail to believe and feel what I want you to feel.
And I agree. But considering his track record, why couldn't he have done it with a story as well?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That should have been the icing on top of the cake.
Yeah.
Not the entire fucking cake.
You mean like those bits in Inception when they go into the Inception land, which is kind of like high action sandwiched between drama.
So it's, well, there's no drama. It's fucking exposition upon exposition. Yeah, rewatching, rewatching.
No, I'm not sure.
You know how sometimes it takes watching a film with another person to start seeing differences.
Fucking hell, yes.
Stuff. So like, I put Inception on for my old man.
Oh shit! So did I.
I wasn't. I was half an hour.
I nearly got fucking booed out of the room by my own dad.
But I was watching it, it's just like, oh my God, this is, they're just talking about what they're going to do and how they're going to do it for hours. There's no drama in it. There isn't actually any drama.
I watched it with my folks around Christmas. It's like, well,
it's the same
Christmas
time you're watching fucking Game of Thrones. Like,
Jesus,
oh, Game of Thrones has failed. Let's try
Jesus Christ. Let's not go back there,
mate. This won't fail.
Em said, I'm going to watch Game of Thrones. Should we start watching Game of Thrones? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, let's... did you say... Get off... Oh, God, no. The memories...
Flashbacks.
Flashbacks.
What did your dad say? Because we turned it off. God. We didn't get to the end.
Yeah, well, both my parents, like, it's a really weird thing happened. Like, me and my brother, we said, Inception's class, you got to watch it. We put it on at Christmas... Because we always have to come up with, we always have to choose a film at Christmas because, like, who the fuck doesn't? It must have been within fucking seconds, but they looked at each other, those two, and they were like, we're not having this shit. And then, like, they just started laying into it, like, out loud, like, oh, come on, or like, what? Oh, come, what's this shit? I think my dad said, 10 minutes in, and they were fucking tapped out. Why? What was it? Was it that bad? I haven't watched it since.
Nothing happens.
Really?
We were so amazed that, like, it's a dream within a dream within a dream within a dream.
Yeah.
But it's almost more Dunkirk thing, although there is a story fundamentally flawed by that, oh my God, I have to break into your mind so that I can go and see my kids in America because I'm not allowed there. Why not just bring your kids to France?
Mines? You fucking hell, yeah, exactly.
I still like the film, but you realise that, oh my God, it's all just them talking about
what they're
going to do with the odd chase and then some mind-bending set piece.
Like, was it just as bad watching it with your old man as was my folks?
Why
do they know? How can they see that shit? We can't.
I just started...
He also fucked the Matrix off when I tried to show him that at Christmas.
Oh, well, then he's got issues.
Yeah, he has.
But I just felt coldness. That was just it. You can feel like you're not. I can see you're not enjoying this.
Yeah, and then you think, wait a minute,
what is?
I'm a massive dick.
Oh yeah, this is why it's terrible, isn't it? It's
like, I've told him that I like these kind of things.
I remember trying to put on Star Trek for somebody, and I was just like, this was a bad choice.
Yeah. Do you remember back in the, I'd say, quite late 90s, coming around my house, and my dad was watching Star Trek The Next Generation on Sky, and he taught us about blocking. He said, by the way, you know those... You know these shots here when fucking Picard is talking to Riker? You know they're just talking to a camera, don't you? No. Yes.
No, I don't remember him telling us that at all. I've known that by then.
What? He's like, no, look, they're just talking. You can tell there's no one on the other side.
I remember your dad going,
fucking bravo then, Dad.
There's the, like, all the aliens and stuff like that, and your dad goes, I just don't buy it. Like, what? Like, space, intergalactic space travel? I go, no, I just don't buy that he's his first officer. He's fucking useless. What does Riker bring to the situation? I still don't get what he was on about.
We should get him on the podcast, mate. Riker
just likes to, like, sit, like, he has the Riker leg. Like,
yeah, it does.
On the
console. No, he strides over the chair, doesn't he? Get a photo of this. This is the Riker leg. Mind Hunter. So who's best out of David Fincher and Christopher Nolan?
Fuck knows. Let's get him in and have a fight to the death.
I don't know. I'm a massive Fincher fan. Also, the genius about Mindhunter was it had that guy called Holt McCallany from Fight Club in it as the top guy.
Yeah, he was really good.
I love that guy.
All the performances. They tell you what I did find quite dull, which was anything to do with the lead character and his relationship.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It took me a while, and then eventually I started warming to it. They go, okay, this is why she's here, because she's much freer than he is, and she's expanding his mind and stuff like that, because he's a very rigid human being.
Yeah.
But to begin with, in the first few episodes, whenever a scene came up with the two of them, especially when they were just fucking, I'd literally just skip. Like, there's no need for this to be here.
No, I totally agree with you. And it wasn't just the first few episodes, it was pretty much all the way through. they kind of dropped the ball on that. Like, there was a, you know, the bit where he catches her basically cheating on him in that, in her school environment thing.
Yeah, with that, in that, with that, that guy, weird dark lights out experiment. Yeah,
exactly. And he's kind of like, and you're like, as a viewer, you're like, okay, they're done then. He waits a couple of more episodes to find her drunk and has to analyse the fact that she doesn't want to be with him anymore. And it's like, what? No, we've been through this. I thought you'd already split up. He's like, are you breaking up with me then? And she's like, yeah, I am. Well, I thought you broke up with her. Do you know what I mean?
When you saw her cheating on you. Hold on a minute.
Yes. So that was slightly... as I think, where it was kind of dropped the ball a little bit. But these two incredible scenes in Mindhunter with the same bad guy inmate, mm-hmm. which is the first time they meet the character who's
the really tall, ugly, fat dude.
Yeah, the first scene when they interview him and they let him off his chains, and the final scene when he hugs him. Yeah, these two standout scenes or set pieces from Mindhunter with the same villain, Kempner, the Kempner character, who's that massive, like, 6'4". Fucking...
Isn't this the one who severs his mum's head and then fucks it to disgrace her, basically, to demean her?
Yeah.
As if cutting her head off wasn't enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes. So the character learns about this before, doesn't he? He knows the kind. He knows what this psychopath has done. He knows all the, like, sickening things that he did to his mother and other women as well. And then he confronts him and he's this, like, huge, like, but also soft... strange.
He seems quite, like, mentally impaired. He seems quite slow to begin with. But then you realise, no, he's not. He's actually extremely smart. He's just calculated. He's thinking about everything he's saying.
Yes.
Because he wants to explain himself and leave no doubt, as well.
Yeah. But watch those scenes.
He seems like he could be a friend. He's not... That's the thing. He's done terrible, horrific things. Mm. But he doesn't scare you on a one-to-one basis. You imagine he could... if you wanted to, like, imagine if he stood in your personal space, fucking what's going on here?
Yeah.
But up until that point, you can imagine having a beer with him, having a conversation with him, which is what's actually happened.
Yes.
Isn't it? Because many police officers have actually... That's how he eventually got caught, because he wanted to be.
Yeah.
But he would go and talk to policemen and befriend them and stuff like that. So he's very warm and sociable.
Yes, and that's so well done, because he's let off his leash so that Holden, the protagonist, can interview him. He's not going to talk to me openly if he's chained up or in his cell and stuff like that. And that's that theme is repeated throughout the series with the other serial killers that they interview, right? Finch is a master at, like... showing rather than telling, by filling the frame and moving the camera, that kind of visual storytelling. I've never seen this before in cinema. The camera pans from the detectives towards the serial killer, who has his back to the camera and he's in silhouette, but the camera racks focus onto the silhouette, like in the frame, so that the protagonist lose focus. I've never seen a camera rack focus on a silhouette before, because there's nothing to focus on. And I was like, oh, that's class. My eye's drawn to something that isn't there. It's an outline of something. It's like...
it's an absence of picture.
Exactly. It's this fucking genius. And also in other scenes when he's talking, he's got when, let's say, the Holden protagonist character is interviewing another serial killer, and it's that those introductory stages where you know how dangerous these serial killers are, and he'll put, like, a coffee cup between the serial killer and the detective, and you'll see, like, the steam come off it a little bit, but you'll know how it becomes like an image of fragility. You know that the serial killer could smash it, and you worry that he will, and that is genius, because he's saying to the audience without telling, he's showing them just by placing something in the frame, that he's creating tension through that method. And that's the sort of stuff that Fincher does that is such gold, that you rarely pick up on, but when you do, you're like, oh shit, I get this. So that's the parts of Mindhunter I love. And then going back to the two scenes that bookended that were incredible was the scene with that same Kemper serial killer, where he confronts him in the hospital, which is a Hannibal Lecter style scene. It's like Lecter's in hospital with someone else's face on.
Yeah.
Like he's outside of the prison. He's tricked his way outside of the prison. And when the Holden character confronts him, he realizes that he's in danger because the Kempner psycho has identified that the hospital doctors, or the whatever they're called, the wardens, attention has lapsed because of the time, so they're not watching the room, they're switching shifts. So he's alone with Holden, the detective, and Holden's in his space, and he stands up from his hospital bed and he towers over him, and Holden just basically gives up, and in his eyes you see him like, I'm absolutely dead. And the serial killer hugs him rather than kills him. Come on, that's good shit, man. That's brilliant. Really good shit.
It's absolutely brilliant. So, it's almost like you think, oh my God, he's just been waiting for this one moment. Mm-hmm. The whole time he's been waiting for this one moment so that he can actually kill him. Yeah. And instead he just embraces him.
Yeah.
And you're like,
and Holden loses shit.
This is dark. This is dark. Didn't Holden cry at this point as well?
He runs away and then collapses and he can't breathe, can he? Like, basically passes out in the corridor.
Fuck.
Genius. So good.
And then they stopped it, Chris.
And they fucking stopped it without telling me. Ah. Damn it.
It was a good series. I've forgotten. I'd actually forgotten how good it was.
Yeah.
You've reminded me.
Yeah. It has its shortcomings, like the stuff, the external stuff away from the crime solving, but which needed a bit more stuff going on. But overall, I loved watching it. Mm. Really enjoyed
his
watching
it. His co-star as well, the guy from Fight Club.
He's
brilliant.
So good.
He's solid.
Yes, he's
a solid performance.
Great character as well. That kind of like a grizzled veteran having to learn and adapt, but also knowing more as well. Mm. So you see him like, the dynamic changes where he's like, he's always right. In the first few episodes, it's like, you're doing it wrong. Trust me, you're doing it wrong. I told you you were doing it wrong. Now, can you learn, please? To, oh fuck, I haven't seen that before. I don't know how to act. Now you're teaching me. Mm. So that's a joy.
I also like that the bosses aren't cliched as well. The bosses are very anti what they're doing, but they're not just dicks for the sake, not like the 90s boss who's just a dick for the sake of it. Yeah. You know, as soon as they, and I've seen it in a couple of things as well, as soon as the boss, who's an obstruction to this, as soon as he finally sees the merit in what they're doing, he's 100% behind it. And now it's his fight to try and get it accepted by the higher-ups as well. I think that's really good writing.
Yeah, because it'd be cliched for him to have like a fucking Jonah Jameson boss that doesn't understand the value of what
they're
doing.
Exactly, in the FBI, you're not going to have somebody stupid rise to that position. And I like the intelligence of them giving weight to that.
When are we going to see a TV series directed and created and devised by Christopher Nolan? And what would it be?
I don't think he's... Well, Jonathan Nolan's smashing it at the moment. Well, before that, he did Person of Interest, which is the building blocks for Westworld, clearly, because it's...
I thought the building blocks for Westworld were Westworld.
No, but in terms of all of... or the running thread through the four seasons of Person of Interest is about AI.
What's Person of Interest?
Okay, so it's a mid-range TV program, a bit like Knight Rider.
Or Lex.
You can't put Lex in mid-range.
Lex.
L-E-X-X.
Yes.
There was Hex as well, but that's something different.
I thought it was called Lex, like the Dark World. Or
it was Lex, but it's L-E-X-X.
Wow.
Yeah. So Nolan's been doing Person of Interest, which is about...
Jonathan Nolan. Christopher Nolan's American brother.
Yeah.
Why is he an American brother?
Because his brother went and studied in Chicago when they were younger and ended up... And then went to uni and ended up staying there and
You can't have two brothers, one British and one American.
It just fucks with your mind.
No, I'm not having that.
Michael Emerson's created a machine. It's called The Machine, which has tapped into every security camera, every microphone, like, in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it builds up basically potential threats for the American government.
Oh, you mean it captures
potential threats, identifies them, and then the American government eliminate them before they become a problem.
Like a more shit Minority Report.
Yeah. Within the course of him manufacturing it, he was getting lots of false positives, or they were getting people who were deemed, like, who were going to be killed and murdered, but weren't a threat to national security.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise's character in Minority Report.
So what he's done is he builds, basically makes every midnight, so it spits out a list of people who are going to be killed, and all they get is a social security number.
Yeah, or a red or a blue ball.
Or a red or a blue ball.
Yes.
And you never know.
Yeah, yeah.
But they have to. They never know. Unlike the red and blue ball, they never know whether that person is somebody who's going to commit a murder or somebody who's going to be murdered.
Colin Farrell
in Minority Report. But he's, so Jonathan Nolan's had 4 years of doing the of working with the concept of AI and the machine. It's called The Machine, and it's constantly learning and stuff like that. It's a very middle of the road series. It has some great highs and lows. Michael Emerson is fantastic in every scene he's in.
Is that the guy from Lost? Yeah. He's like the leader.
No, it's the guy.
It's called the leader.
I can't remember. He's the guy who parachutes in, and he's caught. You never know whether he's a good guy or bad guy for ages.
But yeah, that's strange from Lost, isn't it, that you don't figure out
you don't figure out what the hell's going on. So then he's, Jonathan Nolan's then gone on to Big Boy School, which he was always in anyway, but I mean in terms of his ideas that he's gathered
Big Boy School for Jonathan Nolan was
I meant in terms of the ideas behind it, not in terms of the quality of his filmmaking.
Okay, sorry.
But you can imagine when he was doing all the research, there was stuff that just wouldn't fit into what they were trying to do. So that's where Westworld, I think, has come from.
I don't know how he landed that Westworld gig, like, probably off the back of that, is like, must have pitched it like that. Like, here's the knowledge of, or here's what I want to talk about. I kicked it off. Here's my proof of concept.
Yeah, totally.
And I want to redo Westworld, and I think I'm ready for it. And what I want most of all is a character played by a British actor who is awful.
What?
So bad.
What?
You know, like the writer.
Oh, he's terrible.
He's so bad.
What? Fucking Tony? No.
Oh, yeah, there's loads of British actors, isn't there? Sorry.
No, he's awful. He's absolutely diabolical.
That's what he wants more than anything.
What a spanner he is. Oh,
so miscast.
Fucking, you were saying, what would a Christopher Nolan TV series be? And I said, I don't know, but Jonathan Nolan's already smashed it, so it doesn't matter.
Christopher Nolan, he has gone from focusing on like memory loss and in Memento to prestidigitation in The Prestige to dreams to corporate America to space to Batman, and then, you know, that's a broad palette that he's painting with. Like,
wouldn't you want to do that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know what my point is other than to absolutely start wanking over him. Shit, man. That's a modern day Spielberg.
With less fun. Like, you can't imagine Christopher Nolan doing a family movie, can you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
No, I can't.
Yeah, you can.
Not at all. He just hasn't got the magic.
Yeah, you're right. I can't see that either.
That's what's missing from his filmmaking. I'd love to see
empathy.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan would never do E.T. He's incapable of that at the moment.
He's more, yeah, exactly.
I mean, maybe not, and probably, to be fair, not even interested. That's okay.
I think that's the point. Yeah, it's like he. I think the films that end up being screened are like the near as perfect his vision on celluloid, right? Because I don't think he cares about those other stuff. But then again, I think he went as deep as he could with Interstellar.
The relationship between the father and daughter in that, I love, I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
And her eventual then hatred of him for him not turning up. And when at the end where he sees her, and she's, Merv, and she's there and she's an old lady and stuff like that, it fucking breaks my heart.
Oh, it was wonderful. Ellen Bernstein as well, wasn't it?
Huh?
Wasn't it Ellen Bernstein?
Yes, yeah.
Maybe Nolan wipes the floor with Fincher.
I think they go head to head.
I don't know. There's something like Fight Club.
He's angry.
He was angry after Alien 3.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
Why would you remake that?
Even with Sorkin, though, mate.
Oh,
come on.
Social Network. Social Network I love. Yeah. But what I don't get is why do that remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo? Because I like the original very much.
Yeah.
I like Fincher's very much.
Yeah.
They're fucking identical.
Yeah. Are they?
In so many ways, they're so similar. I need to put them on side by side and just start checking the differences.
What, how would you describe, like, sum up Fincher's direction, his directorial style, rather?
There are some directors who talk about happy accidents.
Yeah.
I don't see Fincher. I'm sure they do happen.
Or Nolan either.
Yeah, but he doesn't strike me. They don't strike me as the type. Maybe in the acting, because he talks about the reason he does like 25, 30 takes.
Does he? Is that what he's famed for?
Yeah.
Fincher?
Because he says the really interesting stuff starts happening around take 11, take 12.
Yeah.
Which is...
It sounds so fucking tedious.
I've heard people say the opposite of that. Mm. You can take it way too far and go into something like, 70 or 80 takes, which was in the case of Meet Joe Black, which is why it couldn't make any money, because they just spent so much.
That is really weird that you mentioned that film. Because
I have a soft spot for it.
Yes, I know, because we watched it at your university campus, like in Wakefield.
Did we?
Yes, you showed it me, I think. It's about 5 hours long.
It feels
but also,
it in places.
I was going to say, I tell you, someone that wouldn't deal with that, put up with that kind of shit from a director.
Anthony Hopkins?
Yes.
Not anymore, yeah. No, he's fit because...
Who won't rehearse?
Yes.
He won't even join in rehearsals, will he?
When I was in LA last year and was listening to that talk from Brett Ratner before he'd been outed as the slime, all that he is.
Ratner?
He was talking about Red Dragon, and he was talking about how...
Did Ratner direct Red Dragon?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
And he was talking about how scarred Anthony Hopkins was from doing...
Meet
Joe Black and the 70 or 80 takes. And because he doesn't like to do more than 4 takes.
No, yeah.
And fair enough, he's earned that right. He's good. If you don't get it in 4 with Anthony Hopkins, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And Brett Ratner didn't want to work that way, and he said he was going to like 7 or 8 takes and stuff like that. And eventually they got a call from his agent saying, oh yeah, apparently Ratner's going all Martin Brest, properly freaking out. So Brett Ratner invited
Hopkins
to come and watch the dailies.
Yeah.
And he said he watched the first 4 takes, and then after take 5, 6, 7, he's starting to kind of sit uncomfortably in his chair kind of watching the shit acting that's his perception of him being shit.
Well, Hopkins is squirming, watching himself back.
Yeah, basically. And then he sort of says he gets to kind of take 9, take 10, and he starts relaxing a bit and...
Really?
Getting, well, supposedly, who knows.
According to Ratner,
the slime ball, Ratner.
But if he was telling the truth, then that's fucking fascinating.
Interesting, isn't it? But this harks back to the whole 25 takes thing with Fincher. Mm. But also he did that for... Because he talks about that a lot at the beginning of Social Network.
But wait a minute. Hopkins' performance did get better after sort of stringing
him
out.
So you get the first 4 takes, which are gold.
Yeah.
Then you get a lull. And then you start getting to an interesting place again.
Yeah.
Once you start warming up out of that. Apparently.
Yes.
Because, there's no way he did more than 4 takes on Westworld, which is some of his best work, I think.
Is it?
I think his acting in Westworld's phenomenal.
There's a clip
on YouTube that is just that somebody's gone through the entire first season and cut out all of Hopkins' scenes and strung them together one after the other. I've watched it so many times.
An hour of Hopkins.
Just again and again. Especially the scene where he sat in the restaurant outside against that other executive. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That scene is a game of chess.
Yeah.
And it's superbly executed. Every time she thinks she's on top, he throws just something else at her. But what I've seen is I've seen somebody deconstruct that.
Yeah.
It's funny because they don't know they clearly don't know the first thing about how Hopkins works. Because of course I do.
I was going to say, aren't you his best mate?
Yeah. But they talk about they deconstruct that scene and talk about every little gesture and moment about why he's so good. But they're talking about it in the tense like he's planned it.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about Hopkins, you know that he doesn't plan beforehand. He reads the script about 200 times, trying to keep it completely neutral. So all he's doing is committing it to memory.
Yeah.
And then he's acting in the moment. He's doing a proper Meisner-esque kind of reading of it.
Yeah, because isn't his advice to people just read the lines?
Yeah, just go off impulse.
Just read it.
Because when we're talking...
Say it.
When we're talking right now, we might be considering what we want to say in advance a little bit.
I'm absolutely not.
But most of the time, you're not thinking about what you're saying before you say it, or how you're saying it.
Or how you look saying it.
Exactly. That's his thing, and that's what I try and get actors to do when I'm working with them as well. I think you learn it to the point that you can forget it. Yeah. Then you're doing Robert Downey Jr. or you're doing John C. McGinley or you're doing Anthony
Hopkins. That kind of patter. that. Wait, are you saying that they're doing
they all work in a very similar way in terms of their preparation?
Right, okay.
Which is learning it to the point that you can fucking forget it.
Okay, cool.
Downey Jr. apparently puts the script all up on the wall and then starts removing letters from the words.
Isn't that just because he's bored and rich?
Well, probably. But he doesn't consider he knows the script until he can do it all that way. John C. McGinley will do it while doing other stuff, like fucking juggling while doing his lines.
Yeah, because you forget, like, these fucking A-list actors have to grind out learning lines still, you know, like you do in school.
Well, you do get, it depends who you are, and you do get, and depending on how frequently you do it, you get better at it as well. Like, I remember reading in Still Me, which is Christopher Reeve's autobiography.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about learning his lines on the bus on the way to work every day. Yeah. And, you know, and some actors, you can read it once or twice and it's in there.
Yeah.
If you're comfortable working that way, then fine. Other people, you're right, they have to fucking sit and grind this stuff out.
Yeah.
Because if you fuck up, you know, you're wasting... You could be wasting thousands of dollars at a time.
Especially if you're shooting on film.
Yeah, totally.
That's just burning money.
Well, not
money.
Even that. Forget that. Michael Caine talks about in his book, like, imagine you've got, like, 100 horsemen coming over the hill,
yeah.
You know, charging, and all you've got to do is say one line. And he talks about fucking it, like, his first thing.
Well, like, the man who would be king or something.
Well, even before that, but just kind of, like, fucks his line. It's like, great, it's going to take us 2 hours to reset
No, that's not right.
It's going to take us 2 hours to reset everything and cost us this much because you can't say one fucking line.
Oh, no.
Lots of his early career stuff is horrible.
It sounds
evil. Well, look, we need to wrap up. Really.
Who's the best director out of David Fincher and David Nolan?
Put your answers on Twitter and tell us all about it.
Christopher Fincher or David Nolan? Who's your best director? Twitter.
David Nolan.
Well, I hope you like this week's rambly Nolan and Fincher-filled catch-up. I certainly did. Tristan, did you?
I did. I loved it.
And we can't wait to see you again next time.
But seriously, who is your favourite director? Is it Christopher Nolan or is it David Fincher?
Mine's David Fincher.
I wasn't asking you.
Fuck.
Get on Twitter, tell us all about it. Tweet it at Box Fresh Films.
Do it.
At Box Fresh Films.